My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine. Over the last 5 years, the Bitcoin Conference has become the world's largest gathering of Bitcoiners. From breaking announcements and international media coverage to countless meaningful talks by thought leaders and industry innovators, we are excited to continue our drive for global hyper-Bitcoinization. From July 25th to the 27th, 2024, we'll be taking the Bitcoin Conference to the city of Music and Freedom, Nashville, Tennessee. Join thousands of attendees for countless opportunities to learn, engage, and network across 3 days of pure Bitcoin signal. Get your tickets now for the best price at b.tc/conference. You are not going to want to miss what Nashville has in store.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of FedWatch. My name is Ansel Lindner, and I am here with co-host Nolan Bowerly, Count BTC. How are you doing today?
I love life, Ansel. Who could complain? It's the dog days of summer. This is, we'll warn everyone, this is the dog days of summer episode. We are, of course, you know, people take vacation on our production team, but we want to bring you the show year-round. So welcome to the dog days episode. We're in the dog days.
Yep, so we're rolling with a new setup here. I'm actually going to be screen sharing, which is not the normal thing, so hopefully I don't mess it. I can do it on my own stream, but we'll see when I have a guest how it works out. But today we have a big show. We're going to be talking US CPI that dropped this morning. Slightly unexpected result by the market. You know, I was predicting it pretty close to exactly what came down. And I also live streamed on bitcoinandmarkets.com, all of those channels, YouTube, Rumble this morning. That was a fun live stream, pretty much right around the time, Nolan, you were live streaming on your channels, correct?
We go every morning at 8 a.m. It's the breakup, and we love looking at the fake news. We love looking at the real news. We love looking at the optimistic news, but we bring you the news every morning at 8 a.m. And if you watch our show, you can avoid all the other news, right? Because
yeah, it's a great summary, man. And I love watching just how you put stuff together and how you play. It's not word. It's like word association, you know, and where we are in all of these cycles, where we are socially, monetarily. Great show. So if you guys don't watch the breakup, you need to start watching it every morning. It's a great show. So yeah, we're going to be talking CPI. U.S. and China. China came out this week and they were a big surprise. So we're going to take a look at that. And then I just wanted to talk with Nolan and pick his brain about the Bitcoin price, the lack of volatility that we're seeing. Does the lack of volatility, what does that say for our narrative about Bitcoin? That's all coming up today. Make sure you guys like, share, subscribe out there on YouTube and Rumble. We're also going on Facebook, I think possibly on Twitter as well. So make sure you guys share the content out everywhere.
LinkedIn. We're on LinkedIn.
Nolan, do you have anything to plug? You want to talk about the conference a little bit? Or
yeah, we're going to be in Amsterdam in October. So that's partly what I do over at Bitcoin Magazine. We produce the live events, and I've been producing live events in the industry for a number of years now. And so we've got a big one coming up in Amsterdam. Everyone's going to be there. We're going to be talking about the MiCA regulations. Wait till you get a load of this thing. It's absolutely hilarious. We're going to be talking about the corruption of media. We're going to be talking about energy literacy. We're going to be talking about CBDCs, all the stuff that goes into why we love Bitcoin. And not just that, we're going to hear from some of the best devs in the Bitcoin space. Again, of course, there'll be workshops and things like that. So, you know, come, it's going to be great. We're going to have amazing speakers, and it's our European show. So it's a little different than the American show. But I think, nevertheless, exactly what's needed in the European market these days. We need people who are energy literate and financially literate and a little less worried about how Greta feels about stuff, right? That's how we're approaching it.
Yeah, I would love to get over there. I'm sure it has a different flavor than the Miami Beach ones. But now going to Nashville next year, I think that's the conference is going to have even a different flavor from prior years. So I'm excited to go to Nashville for next year. All right, let's jump right into the Bitcoin chart and we can talk about that volatility. So if we can share my screen here, I think you need to toggle back and forth there, Nolan.
I got it. I was reading the comments. I like to read comments. So it's taking a second.
All right, so this is the Bitcoin daily chart. And I've been watching this pattern for a very long time. We're holding this bottom diagonal trend line since the beginning of the year, multiple points of contact. Then just recently, we've broken that $31,000 mark, but that also symbolizes the top of this price pretty much all year. And now we're kind of coming to a decision point, breaking down, touching that trend line, the diagonal trend line again. Do we bounce here? I thought a couple days ago, as you can see that little red line, I thought we were breaking out at that point. Everything seemed to be, all the boxes were being checked, but it has failed to have that breakout. If we go to the weekly chart here, you can see that formation. Pretty much the entire year, we have been forming this pattern. And will we break up from here? If we break down, that is going to be put us way out of the cycle timing. And you can see that line, the vertical line on the far right is the halving and or kind of estimated where the halving is going to be. But if we drop out down out of this triangle pattern, it's going to put us way far behind when it comes to the cycle timing and halving and all of that. So I think that everything is lining up bullish with the narrative, with all of the news items, you know, the mining industry, ESG and energy, everything is so bullish for Bitcoin that I'm still thinking we're breaking up north out of this pattern, but you know, time is drawing close. So Nolan, do you have anything to say about these two charts that I showed?
Yeah, and I think it relates to the volatility question, which I think we're going to talk about next, but I'll set it up in the sense that you know, what we have to take into account. So I continue to believe that the way hyper-Bitcoinization happens is if the BlackRocks and the energy companies of the world are saving their money in Bitcoin, have that on the balance sheet. Think of that in terms of a major foundation of their economic measurement, health, wealth, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But until now, the only industry that has truly done that, right, had Bitcoin at the center of what they did was crypto, right? Whether we like it or not, the crypto industry, all of it, right? Because we all know that the line between like scams and actual optimistic creativity is really a fine line, right? We wouldn't really have crazy creativity and risk-taking if it wasn't there. And it is a real tough line to see sometimes. But that whole industry was wiped out. Right. And they're probably not coming back. So as Bitcoin is evolving and turning itself into these other industries, the place it came from just can't participate the way it once did. And you see that the real Bitcoiners that have been for a while just simply don't have any more there's no more powder to buy this stuff. So simply because the industry itself has been having, you know, it's been a year of really rough times for a lot of major players. So it's part of the rebirth of Bitcoin again, right? It always, every cycle sort of takes on a completely different profile, let's say. Always the same story, but different fuel, I guess you could say.
Absolutely. And Bitcoin is going to mature. You know, a lot of people, Bitcoin is not just how it was the first couple years of Bitcoin when it was the crypto anarchists hacking away at the code. It is complete. Every cycle is completely different type of people that come in. And now we're looking at mainstream ETF adoption, mainstream asset allocator adoption. And so that's what we're looking at. Next slide here we have is this one from, I took this from Dylan this morning. And you can see that the blue line is the trading volume ratio of spot to derivative. The black is the price line. So this means, this blue line crashing means that spot volume is just falling like crazy compared to derivative volume. Now, actually, it could also mean that derivative volume is increasing. And I have seen some things recently about some account on Twitter called this a giga long. That these guys are whales, that they know these whale accounts and whale positions on a lot of exchanges have been opening up gigantic derivative longs, you know, margin longs. And so that could also be pushing the spot volume down relative to derivative volume. But I wanted to bring up his tweet and read out exactly what his case was. So this is Dylan this morning. Spot to derivative trading volume is at an all-time low. His take. This market is just derivative traders chopping each other into oblivion. Spot bears have just run out of coins, and spot bulls are either fully deployed or are sidelined, TradFi waiting for ETF approval. So basically, you know, the bears have run out of coins to short, and bulls are either fully long already. You know, that's my case is I buy in big chunks at the bottoms. And so I don't leave dry powder to buy all the way up, you know, so that is his case, and also TradFi waiting for ETF approval. So I thought this was a very interesting chart. What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's the same perception that I have where the narrative is forming energy. You can see that narrative gathering steam, right? We've seen the BlackRocks. And I think even just to put the context again in BlackRock, we're not talking about just a $10 trillion in assets under management. What does that mean? What's the scale of that? Well, it's the third largest country in the world. That's the scale, right? The scale is the third largest country on earth. I heard Patrick Bet David making that point on the Joe Rogan podcast last week. And that's really what we're talking about here. This isn't just, some rich person on Wall Street had something intelligent to say. This is about massive structural redeployment. And you've even heard that kind of language come out of others who are around Wall Street operating at that level, right? They're really re-looking at everything. And you're going to see Bitcoin sort of fit a lot of tick a lot of boxes when it comes to the questions that they have, how to deal with this problem and how to deal with that problem, particularly this duration mismatch, the risk management debacle of all the treasury bills that they all have. And we see what's happening at WeWork, for example, right? I saw Ter Demeester yesterday talking about the duration mismatch WeWork is experiencing with the bonds they've issued and how they probably can't survive another month. And that's sort of a, you know, a company admitting the truth. Well, I understand sovereign governments are not the same as companies. I get it. They can borrow money off of your head. But nevertheless, it's a big problem, right? And so it's the same issue. They're facing the same issue as real estate companies and things like that. So I even heard language around that kind of thing, right? Like a super storm coming from BlackRock this week, some kind of language around just the potential for change that's coming to real estate and several other industries.
Yeah, like Airbnb. I've seen some stuff about the Airbnb bubble, but I wanted to hone in on something too about, you said $10 trillion in assets under management. A lot of people think that, it's going to be, a trillion of that comes into Bitcoin, then the market cap will go up a trillion, but no, it's asymmetric. Bitcoin is not going to get probably more than 1% allocation by traditional finance, but $1 billion coming into Bitcoin leads to a $10 or $100 billion market cap boost. So it's very asymmetric on the Bitcoin side. So $10 trillion is just like, I don't know. It's a lot bigger than what people think when they think about the result to the Bitcoin price. So, all right, let's anything else to add on this? I have one more slide on price, and that is this volatility. So this is a 30-day volatility tracker, and it goes all the way back pretty much to the beginning of Bitcoin. And you can look at just right now, we are at the lowest. Last week and this week are the two lowest weeks in this entire time series of 30-day volatility. And so I've been saying, yeah, price has been very boring, but it's like a sea change. Something is coming. Something is going to happen to bring volatility back. It's not like Bitcoin is done with volatility forever. It's just right now, it's the calm before the storm. And this chart really does show that. It's extremely calm, but the storm is coming. So what's your thoughts on the volatility here?
Yeah, it's like you said, right? Not having the powder dry. It's like Dylan alluded to, and it's like I alluded to earlier. I think it's a dog days of summer type of argument, right? Just like our production here, right? Just like I've been focusing on the breakup on all the, like we have a special focus on really fake news this summer, because basically all the higher quality journalists are taking summer vacation and there's just a lot of interns making fake news. I think there's a bit of that going on here. It's typical. I've seen it many times where Bitcoin in these summers has sort of gone pretty dormant with it just not catching on and people not wanting to run around and get excited about these short spreads. So this is a seasonal thing. This is like the equivalent of, it's not quite nice enough to go outside yet. Right? It's not quite like winter's over, but I don't know. It's not a great day out, right? So it's a bit of that.
Absolutely. And on that price chart, if I go back to this weekly one, you can see end of Q3. That's the thing I've been watching very closely, and we've talked about it here before. End of Q3 is a cyclically or seasonally, I guess, a very volatile time. And so if Bitcoin, and it just happens to correspond right towards the end of this triangle pattern on Bitcoin, which I think is very interesting. So everything's kind of lining up for the ETFs, for Bitcoin, for the positive narratives in around Bitcoin mining and everything. So I think price is ready to jump. But that's all I have for price. Should we move on to US CPI?
Yeah, man, let's do it.
All right. So US CPI, let me just bring up, I'm trying to do this. So we might hear some of some of these headlines about inflation is coming back. So this morning we had a CPI come in at month over month headline of 0.2%. That's the same as June's. So June and July were the same number. However, June and July of 2022 were way different. So June of 2022 was over 1% month over month, where July of 2022 was zero. So even though June and July of 2023 are the same, the ones that they were replacing are way different. So we saw an actual uptick in the year over year number by 0.2% up to 3.2% year over year in July. Core came in slightly lower from 4.8% year over year to 4.7% year over year. And that's what I was talking about on my show yesterday in a preview of CPI, saying that we could see a mixed bag where core falls, but headline rises. And this headline you're seeing on the screen here is the thing that I think we're going to hear a lot about. So people think inflation is coming back. And I just wanted to read this first sentence because it's crazy. So it might look like it's been defeated, but U.S. inflation is poised to begin accelerating again soon. Stocks and bonds are unpriced for this outcome. And it was just a few minutes ago when you were talking about priced in, like the halving is priced in or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this sentence is just very full of hubris, because they're saying we know what the price should be. And the market is wrong. right? Mm-hmm. And we have been wrong about inflation the whole time. And now we're saying it's going to reaccelerate. And we know what the prices of stocks and bonds should be. I mean, there's just so many fallacies and mistakes wrapped up in this one sentence. I think it's crazy, but I think people should be ready for this kind of narrative to come back. Nolan, stop me whenever you want to here. So I have
there is no end to the amount of contradictions these folks can try to peddle at any one moment. So it's a lot of fun. It's an exciting, one of the best things you can do is when you know someone is lying, watch them, right? You don't tip them off. You study them. Cause once you start studying tricks of how this stuff works, right, you then can sort of recognize it in the wild very easily. And this is one of those perfect examples of like, hey, even though we had it wrong last time, this is what you should be afraid of now.
Yeah, this is why the market is wrong and I'm right.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is headline month over month. And all the way over on the right, you can see it did tick slightly up because they go by hundredths of a percentage point, not just tenths of a percentage point on the chart here. I highlight with the red arrow the month that fell off. So that was July of last year at 0%. That's why we kind of went slightly higher. But I also highlighted this big red box of the high period of the CPI, and that period is over. It's definitely a change in character from that high period. This is the headline year over year, and you can see the slight little uptick. And man, I bet there's going to be an outsized cry about the return of high inflation. Higher for longer is what we're going to hear probably, but don't bite off on that false narrative. So this, I've been talking about a return to post GFC normal for a very long time. So what I did here is, this is month over month again, and I zoomed out to include the Great Financial Crisis. The big blue box in the middle, obviously that is post GFC normal, where inflation was between, year over year was between like 1 and 2.2%, I think is the highest it got in that period. And then we have COVID over here in 2020, a high period of CPI month over month. And now we have returned back to this same kind of post GFC normal. And that is what I'm expecting. Now, what does that turn into, or why would that be the case? And for people new to this show and to my content, is that we are at the end of a credit bubble. You can't solve a debt problem by adding more debt, especially if that debt is not very productive, right? You can get out of a debt problem by adding more debt if there's something really productive to invest in. But what we have now is just really high debt burden, very low productivity of new debt. And so we are just going to grind lower and lower. That's why CPI cannot get off of the zero bound. Nolan, any comments on that?
Yeah, you can just see the elastic of the elastic band, let's say, of how much fault tolerance there is in the system. And for the car industry, for example, or we're going to be talking about groceries, you know, you get Aldi, I guess, today announcing all kinds of Aldi grocery stores disappearing across the United States, more closures. Really? Yeah, Aldi of all places, right? You see it fulfilling such a huge competitive spot in the U.S. grocery landscape, but now Aldi, right, having trouble, and it's indicative of that idea that all the money that was printed for COVID really didn't result in any productivity benefit anywhere around. We didn't really see like the Build Back Better thing. You know, what's getting built back? I don't understand. Now, there's a way to imagine that. You know, I've seen the manufacturing hype out there that manufacturing is coming back. That does look good, right? It sounds like the semiconductor stuff is for real as far as American manufacturing of, I don't mean the LK99 part. We still don't know exactly what's going on there. Yeah. But I mean the manufacturing coming back to America. I mean, we can't say that the economy is finding ways to deploy capital that's making everyone's life better, because that's not what I'm seeing at all.
Yeah, well, on that manufacturing topic there, we have seen manufacturing investment going up in the United States for new factories, like actually building new factories here for the first time in decades. But it's still declining. So the overall investment is still declining. So it's just kind of the cleanest dirty shirt right now in the United States. But yeah, it is the one industry that's kind of outperforming in the credit markets. So yeah, that's a great point. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Let me see what else I have here. So shelter month over month ticked up a little bit, but the interesting part about this month's CPI was that shelter was 90% of the increase. Last month it was 70%. This month it's 90% of the increase came from the shelter component. And you can see, though, that the shelter has turned over and is coming back down. It's just a lagging part of the CPI. If we go shelter year over year, it becomes much more clear. It has turned over and it is coming down. So what does that mean for the rest of the CPI? You know, it's already low. Here we have headline X shelter. It's basically a zero. I think it's like 0.06 or something like that. So if you take shelter out, CPI is already at zero, not 2%, zero.
And you've been predicting this in this lagging aspect of shelter in the overall calculation of inflation. You've been predicting this lag at least for the last 8 or 9 months that I've been coming on the show intermittently with you. I know that it's one of the first things that you were mentioning, this lagging piece. You're already talking about that in December. And so this is exactly what you predicted, if that's what I'm seeing. And that is also what I'm seeing out in the marketplace, just, you know, observationally and anecdotally.
Yeah, exactly. If we go back here, so the shelter rate of change is still pretty high year over year. We can see this, but month over month, it is coming down. So, yeah, I think that's just very important to understand that shelter is a lagging indicator. It doesn't have a mind of its own. It's not like shelter is going to automatically start going back up when everything else is going down. No, the market is a holistic thing. And the shelter just shelter component just happens to be a lagging indicator here that we're looking at. But so this is headline X shelter month over month. And I have headline X shelter year over year. And look at where we're at. We're down here at, I think this came in under 1%. So that's if you take it out of the year over year number. Now, I have a couple of these charts that I'm bringing back from last week when we talked about the SLOOS data. This is the senior loan officer survey that the Fed does. So they go out and they say, hey, are you tightening standards, lending standards? What is your demand look like out there for loans? And so both the demand for loans, which is this top one, is falling drastically. Up to 60% of the senior loan officers are saying they're seeing falling demand for loans. And the bottom one is tightening standards for commercial and industrial loans. So that means about 50 to 60% of these senior loan officers are saying that they're tightening their lending standards. So I bring this back up because there is no way for CPI to turn back around. I mean, short of another COVID shutdown where we shut down the entire economy, CPI and quote unquote inflation is a done story. The market just has not realized it yet, but it's over. What we need to worry about now is deflation. And if I could bring this back to Bitcoin here, since this is like a, you know, Bitcoin show, that Bitcoin does well during kind of deflationary times, during these recessionary times. Now, during COVID, yeah, we had the flash crash. That didn't help Bitcoin, but nothing survived the singularity that was the COVID crash. So, but if you look at the whole entire history, if we go back to, let's see, what number was that? If we go back to here, from 2010 to 2019, Bitcoin did very well, right? Bitcoin launched and got a price and went from under a dollar to, I don't think we were at 69,000 at that point, but probably about 40,000 in that period. And so these kind of the post GFC normal is not a bad thing for Bitcoin. Bitcoin is surviving in these deflationary times. And I just want to, before I get your input on this, Nolan, is the reason for that is because we have a monetary shortage and people think, oh, how can that be? Because they're printing so much money. Yeah, they're printing this money as debt and they can't, it's not productive and they had to repay it. So the dollar doesn't weaken because every time you print a dollar, you have to eventually pay that back and with interest, right? Even if the interest rate is close to zero, it's not zero. So you have to pay that back with interest and that adds more debt burden and slower growth and all of this stuff. So the money itself is stopping, is starting to stop to work. And what they do in that, what people tend to do in those periods is look for a monetary alternative. That's why in a deflationary environment, Bitcoin can do very well because Bitcoin is that monetary alternative. So, all right, Nolan, I'm done.
Well,
my rant. What's your take?
Yeah, I'm here to agree with the opportunity here that you're presenting. And I just want to try and shine a light specifically where I see it. So what's different about now and the post GFC normal, as well as how Bitcoin relates to it, is that all of that time there was stimulus, right? There was money coming into the system to propel what really was sort of risk on venture, cutting edge Bitcoin stuff and all the other, right? Like I said, that fine line between what's scammy and what's optimistically possible, right? And Bitcoin was able to live in that environment because indeed people were looking for risk because there was money being injected into the system for people to go out and find the new thing and to invest in stuff. And of course, Bitcoin did benefit, I think, well from the VC crowd that was first in line for this money, right? The VC crowd in San Francisco and in New York and all these guys were first in line and they did spend the money on Bitcoin and Bitcoin related things. Now, what I'm hearing is, and this is that really good opportunity for Bitcoin. They're not gonna have that opportunity to grease the wheels anymore. They gotta fight this thing in a hand-to-hand combat way, which is they can't necessarily just increase lending out of the system. They can't increase the debt burden. There aren't going to be many magic tricks to get money into VC's hands again. So when you said that there's an appetite for other financial assets and other instruments, right, then the financialization of Bitcoin and everything that comes off of that becomes suddenly really interesting and, yes, and appealing, as well as venture within Bitcoin, right? The idea of building out pieces of the network, not that it needs it. Like I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, we need new things in Bitcoin all the time. But nevertheless, there is now, what you're saying is instead of VC getting an all velocity of money going from whatever scheme there was put out there to invest in things and to grow it, hitting that line. And now it's going to go directly to Bitcoiners really and people who are building on Bitcoin because the other system is just a knot. It's just going to get you, there's going to be perhaps too much or too little interest, depending on what you're thinking about, and simply no productivity for the money to find itself in. So is that what, like a pretty good summary of what I'm hearing?
Yeah. One way I might have an analogy here to this is Eric Balkunas. He's an ETF guy from Bloomberg. And I mean, he does, there's how many ETFs, like 10,000 different ETFs, and that's a pretty big job, but he's mm-hmm. been hyper-focused on the Bitcoin ETF, mm-hmm. right? Like it's just mm-hmm. a mind virus that takes over, mm-hmm. and now it's taking over the traditional financial system and the TradFi people. So, and as you grow adoption, the creativity and the innovation is exponential within the space. So you have mm-hmm. more people being more creative. Mm-hmm. It's just that's how the S curve of all this stuff works is it's a feedback loop on itself. Mm-hmm. More people doing more things is just amazing. It's mm-hmm. actually the opposite of demographic collapse. You have mm-hmm. fewer people making fewer babies and it just goes exponentially down. Mm-hmm. So Bitcoin is going to be the opposite way where it's just building on each other. And as it takes over people's minds, it'll take over their creativity and their business. So that's what I think.
I've always thought of it as a virus. So indeed.
All right. Next up we have is China CPI and PPI as well. So let me make this bigger. You can see the blue line is, well, let me start with the red line. That is CPI year over year. So not just month over month. This is year over year. In the last 12 months, they've actually slipped below zero of negative 0.3%. And the PPI came in at negative 4.4% year over year. These are massive actual deflation numbers coming out of China. And this is a bad story because, you know, China can't get out of this downward spiral if the global demand is just getting started going down. If I go to the next slide, we have a few outtakes from this Bloomberg article. China slides into deflation as consumer factory prices drop. Quote, China is in deflation for sure, said Robin Zing, I think, chief China economist at Morgan Stanley. He said that in an interview with Bloomberg. Quote, the question is how long? It's up to the policymakers. Will they react with coordinated fiscal and monetary easing? Investors are betting the weak inflation data will prompt the People's Bank of China to add more monetary stimulus, like cutting interest rates. However, the central bank is facing several constraints that's making it cautious, such as a weaker yuan, elevated debt levels in the economy, Fiscal support has also been moderate, giving financial pressure, and I've got to hide this on my screen, financial pressures many local governments are facing. So they can't just go out there and pump debt because they're already in a mass, their debt problem's like twice as bad as the U.S. debt problem. So they can't just continue to add more debt and more debt burden. And also with the closed capital account, they just have nowhere for this extra yuan to go. If I go to the next slide here, we've talked about this on the show a couple times, you and I here, Nolan, and nothing has gotten better for the Chinese yuan. Even with the major policy shifts that we've seen in the last couple of months, they sacked the chairman of the PBOC and replaced him with a Forex expert that was going to prop up the yuan. It was all hands on deck to prop up the yuan just a few weeks ago, and it has gone nowhere. The Chinese yuan is continuing to fall. So that's what I got on the Chinese CPI. What are your thoughts here, Nolan?
Yeah, it's a little more, let's say, nuanced. You got to be careful about any sort of cultural news coming out of China today because there's as much, let's call it, propaganda going on with American impression of China as there probably is in Ukraine and Russia and all these other places. Mm-hmm. But I did read in the Wall Street Journal that they were having tremendous employment trouble. In particular, there were not enough sort of white collar jobs, but that's not exactly how it ought to be described. There weren't enough jobs for people who were promised an education and a degree of this manner would get you that sort of level of attainment. And if you remember President Xi a couple of years ago, it was sort of the biggest thing in China where he took away the accreditation of a whole group of colleges and universities, that they were no longer counted the same as the other schools. And this had a huge destabilizing effect on the social order because these degrees and the prices that were paid for them, for lack of a better or finer definition of what was going on, felt like people were getting the rug pulled on them about a really important thing. And so as I, you know, my understanding of what's going on over in China between these, let's call it managerial class and the normal people. So there's a ton of jobs in the manufacturing sector. There's a ton of jobs in factories. That is all still kind of there. But many people have sort of, been educated out of that world and don't want those jobs. So they're going through a cultural tension that it looks a lot like what we're experiencing in America with our own culture war or whatever you want to call it, right? And again, I always think that Bitcoin is at its absolute best when the average people in China and the average person in America are on the same page about Bitcoin and everything. And seeing these tensions sort of be similar makes me think that what's about to happen with the launch of BRICS, because it continues to be my prediction is the following. We got the BRICS thing coming up here at the end of August. Mm-hmm. Then you got the Fed Reserve, you know, a couple of days later in Wyoming. Everyone's going to be talking about it. It's going to be contrast. I continue to predict that the BRICS 2 shitcoin ain't going to hunt. That dog ain't going to hunt. It's not going to work. It sounds great on paper, right? Buy a bunch of gold, China, Russia. You got all these minerals, all these primary products. Why not create a commodity-based money? Maybe you got to trust the humans to make the commodity-based money. So it's not just a great idea. It's got to be implemented. I believe, of course, that you know, as Satoshi is my witness, they're going to fail. Right? It's going to be XRP or something, right? And then Chris Larson's going to be there. What pre-mine of BRICS 2 shit coins? So it's just not going to work. So that's exactly how Bitcoin sort of enters the public consciousness. And I think how it's coming wrapped in a bow for the average person of China who could really use it right about now. So that's the good news, right? We see what's going on in Hong Kong with China opening up Bitcoin exposure. And I think China is going to have to go all in on this BRICS 2 shitcoin and sort of try to make their economy bound to it in some way, right? Because they need to sort of start over here, right? Because that's at the level that they're at. This thing has been, this Chinese money has been so manipulated for so long now that I don't know if they know where to begin making it the foundation of a BRICS 2 coin. So yeah, this is great news. And like I said, you don't want to take too much you don't want to think, you know, too much about China because it is so complicated and it is so now full of also propaganda and craziness. Looks like things are going poorly. I think I feel fairly confident about that. But it looks like their problems are a lot like our problems. You know, if you just cut through it all, it looks like China has the same exact problems as we have in America. A little bit different in that they're a little older and a little poorer, and you know, I'd rather be in America for sure. I'm not equivocating exactly on every level, and there's a reason why so many people from China are still coming here. But the good news is the Chinese are going to have an opportunity to embrace Bitcoin again in the short term, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting the Fed policy that came out this week with. They're saying that allowing banks to deal with Bitcoin and how they're going to set up this program. If you have, you know, holding Bitcoin in deposits or whatever, you're going to have to get an approval letter from the Fed. And then also talking about stable coins and how they're going to handle the stable coins. But in there was a line. Now I'll see if I can quote it. It was something like, we do not discourage. We can't discourage, or we aren't discouraging people from doing this. So go ahead and do it, basically. And that sounded exactly like what Hong Kong was saying. Mm-hmm. When Hong Kong, when they opened up and the banks would not, you know, the first few weeks of the new policy, the banks still were refusing to deal with Bitcoin companies. And they said, they came out with another statement saying, oh, no, go ahead. Come on, we're saying it's fine. Don't mm-hmm. worry about it. That's kind mm-hmm. of what I got from this Fed policy. So mm-hmm. it's you can look at this new Fed policy negatively, but I look at it as it's part of this broader competition to attract business, innovation, the Bitcoin growth to your shores. So did you see anything on that Fed policy?
No, I got to look into that. I'm actually ignorant about what you're talking about. I did not see that. So I'm very curious now. I did not see what you're alluding to. Is it similar to what the Brian Brooks did a couple of years ago with the OCC by saying basically, now I know it's a different supervisory situation, but I remember when the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency in the summer of 2020 came out and said, actually, banks, you have been doing safety deposit box key management for a long time, and yeah, this is key management, so figure it out, but you have all the legal authority and you're all Bitcoin custodians now, whether you know it or not. And so that was sort of big news at the time, right? Because what that said in the summer of 2020 is the only bridge between US commercial banks offering Bitcoin services, the only bridge to divide was the actual technical custodial part of actually holding right. Bitcoin keys. And so I made the prediction in the summer of 2020 that all the custodians were going to get super crazy valuations now because they're going to have multiple suitors. And indeed they did. I thought it could even have gone more extreme than what it went to. But of course they did all, you know, sort of get bought into by the big U.S. commercial banks at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that similar to this? Is that sort of more or less what they're saying? I mean, with a little more design to the product, but
yeah, I kind of like I guess the takeaway from that, what you were saying, is that go ahead and do it. You're going to do mm-hmm. it. It needs to be done. Don't mm-hmm. feel bad about doing it. And mm-hmm. what this Fed thing stated was they want to use existing regulations where at all possible. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. a very minimal touch, but they are adding this non-objection letter. So you need to get a non-objection letter. And if you are holding Bitcoin and other things on your
tell balance, me more about this non-objection letter, because I want to hear a typical trick these SOBs always do. I learned this from the years of work that I did with lawyers. So I did work at Kraken as part of the Wyoming Bitcoin Bank sort of blue sky, what is a Bitcoin bank team, right? I was a strategist at the time there.
Yeah, and Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you go.
I was going to say, I would have to go back and look and see if that particular language was on the Bitcoin half or just on the stablecoin half. But let's just say it's the stablecoin only. So if you're going to dabble with stablecoins, mm-hmm. You have to get a non-objection letter from the Fed. You have to apply, tell them what you're going to do, and get a non-objection letter.
Yeah. So you want to know how these perverted mind people work that run these agencies? You know what that really is? It's a trap. So what you do is you when you do the non-enforcement letters, no action letters, and all that. So would you say no, we're not going to do anything to you. Don't worry. Like, it's great. This is mm-hmm. this is an SEC trick, right? All the people who have dealt with the SEC for years know this. They did it to that kid who made coins. You know, he was like a 12-year-old kid. And it was called Quarters. Yeah, it was like it was an ICO years ago. It was Quarters, right? It was like arcade money, right? It was arcade money, and he ICO'd. He did really well. And it was sort of a legal ICO, right? Because he got a no action letter from the SEC, so that he got all kinds of people to participate, right? It was sort of a legit-ish thing. And right, everyone was, oh, wow, he got a lot of mainstream media. But the point was, right, I thought, wow, great idea, get a non-compete and do a thing, right? No. I had spoken to a bunch of lawyers. It was a total scam. What they did was, by him signing the no action letter, they used it as kind of like legal precedence. Yeah. It's like you backdoor into agreeing to do something. Therefore, everything about it is now the legal regime. Because just because you've agreed that we won't come after you. When you agree that they won't come after you about XYZ, what they're saying is XYZ is now in their power. They're not going to use them. It's all invented. It's not real. So I'm not sure if that's the case, but it's starting to sound like it. Like, by the way you're describing it, you get a no enforcement. We're cool, man, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, they actually own the Bitcoin and and all well, they agreed, you know. So yeah, scammers. This is typical. There. It's a typical way to carve out more whenever there's uncertain regulatory spheres. This is the vampire trick they use, right? Come in the house. It's great. Sit down. Make yourself comfortable, right? Don't worry about it. And then you're gone. You're gone. You know, they're sucking your blood.
Well, we should next week, maybe we can do a long segment on this, and I can have screenshots and quotes and stuff.
Yeah, I would like to look. I would like to look more into it, and I'll look into it myself, because I'm actually speaking in I totally don't know what it is. It just reminds me of things I've seen before, and things that are sort of counterintuitive that lawyers have told me, and things like that, right? Because I've had the good fortune of spending time with people from the SEC and lawyers who work and CFTC who sort of work at the highest sort of level in that field. So you learn some of the tricky ways the whole thing is set up. So this is one of them. No enforcement letters from the SEC, one of the most corrupt instruments in the American system. Just a complete, total scam.
All right. Well, Nolan, I have to have a hard stop here. So let's wrap it up with any other thoughts, final thoughts on CPI or Bitcoin price. Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I've only got the sort of anecdotal idea that you have. I can see things sort of loosening. I think it's because of what the Fed asked for. It's sort of people are unemployed. And that's about it. I think once the summer's over, we're going to be doing great.
Yeah, I watched a show today and you were saying, oh, it all comes down to waiting for the that wasn't on your show. That was on someone else's show that I watched this morning. But it's all about the unemployment rate, and that's what they're waiting for. So
I always talk about that. That's the only real number that's worth anything in this economy anymore, right? All of that's made up. If your employment numbers are good, you're good. You're good. There's going to be people buying Bitcoin. As long as the employment numbers are good, we got people buying Bitcoin. Right? That's all we need.
All right. Well, thanks, guys, for joining. Make sure to like, comment, subscribe down below. We will be back here on next Thursday, 12:30 Eastern, and maybe we'll be talking Fed and policy, new policy around Bitcoin. But okay, take it away, Nolan. Thanks.
Peace.
What is up, audio listeners? Thank you for enjoying another episode of FedWatch. Down in the show notes, you will find all the appropriate links to our social media, the original version of this podcast, and community links. Also, check out bitcoinandmarkets.com, where I put out a free weekly newsletter every Friday. And there you can also help support the show by signing up to become a paid member. See you next time.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee, a city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.
My fellow plebs, Bitcoin Magazine is headed back to Amsterdam in 2023. We're returning to Westergaas to build on this historic success and continue our mission of global hyper-Bitcoinization. Bitcoin Amsterdam was the biggest European Bitcoin event in history, held from October 12th to the 14th at Westergaas Event Forum, offering 6 different on-site locations and 3 fully programmed stages. We are absolutely stoked to catapult the European community to the global stage. Tickets are at their lowest prices right now. Lock yours in at b.tc/conference/Amsterdam. That's b.tc/conference/Amsterdam.